Welcome to Dig Deep, the mining podcast. In this podcast, we go deep into mining news, hot topics, and live interviews with mining professionals and leading figures in the mining industry. Introducing your host, Rob Tyson, founder and director of Mining International and Mining International Executive, a leading global mining recruitment and headhunting agency.
Hi, mining community. Welcome back to another episode of the Dig Deep, the Mining Podcast. And today's guest is John Wisby, who's the chairman and CEO of International Lithium Corp, who are a well-funded, debt-free, Canadian-based lithium and rare metals resources exploration and development company with strategic assets in Canada, Zimbabwe, and Ireland. With a background in banking, financial technology, and green energy, John has a successful career as an entrepreneur, and joined the company back in 2017. And he's going to share his story, talk about the background, or talk about the company, and also what the outlook is for lithium and for International Lithium Corp. So let's welcome John to the podcast. How are you doing, John?
Yeah, Rob, very well. Thank you very much for having me back. It's good to be here. Great start of the day.
Yeah, and I appreciate your time as well. So, as well, obviously, we always start these podcasts off. Just wanted to even give our audience, those that don't know you, and I'm sure quite a few people that listen to this do know you, but for those that don't, just want to even just tell us a little bit about your background, about your career, before we go in and speak about International Lithium.
Okay, sure. Before running International Lithium, and obviously I'll come to that in a moment, I started off life as a banker. I joined a merchant bank called Kleinwort Benson, which at that time was probably the top UK merchant bank. Then it got swallowed by Dresden and then by Commerzbank. Still a great organization. And then I left them and I started up a financial technology business called Lombard Risk, which eventually went public on AIM. It also spun out another group company, which went public on AIM, called iDocs. Lombard Risk has since been sold for, I think, £52 or £53 million to a company called Vermeg. iDocs still thrives as a quoted public company. So with a market cap of, I haven't looked today, but £250 million plus. So that's, those are good companies to have. So I think a lot of the dynamics for running any company are similar. I mean, you need to be expert on mining or you need to be expert on financial technology, but a lot of the stuff is common sense as well. And business competence is also rather important, regardless of whether you're in any of these sectors or in others like pharma or even journalism. I mean, you need to be able to manage stuff. That's what I did before. Then when Lombard Risk was being sold, and I moved to Switzerland, then I started looking at a number of opportunities where I invested a bit, and in some cases took a board seat. And then I got really interested in International Lithium, and I started off as an investor, became a non-exec director, then I was asked to be deputy chairman, and then the board asked me to take over as chairman and CEO, which in North America seems to be okay, whereas I know name it's a bit random, in 2018. And I've done a lot with that company. Well, we'll talk about it, but it's been very interesting and totally good challenge.
Yeah, so I just wondered if you just, before obviously you speak more about the company, I just wondered if you can just give us a snapshot of International Lithium.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Well, we're a mining exploration company, which is distinct from being a mining company. I mean, mining is a very, very expensive business. You have to invest hundreds of millions into digging holes and drilling mines. Doing extra smelters and that kind of thing. We haven't done that yet, but we've been doing mining exploration, and so Raleigh Lake is a good project where we've taken it to the PEA stage. Come on to more about what PEA means. So we've got mining properties in Canada, as you said in the introduction, kindly. We're looking to do stuff in Zimbabwe, and and an Ireland joint venture with a Chinese major company called Ganfeng Lithium. So Canada, as a Canadian public company, which we are, is obviously a good focus, very stable jurisdiction. You know, you don't have to justify to anybody why you're drilling in Canada. And doesn't mean to say every country's got some frustrations, but nevertheless, it's a safe jurisdiction. That's a very good thing. So we're now doing lithium. We've just made a copper acquisition, and the lithium at Raleigh Lake is complemented by another metal, an alkali metal called rubidium, which I'm very excited by. Perhaps to talk about it later, we're primarily a lithium company, but we now have quite a bit of copper likely to be there, and we know we've got quite a lot of rubidium. The question is what it's worth and how much we have. What percentage of world demand we have could be quite high. So in a sense, I'd rather hear it's only 1% of world demand, but it's probably quite a bit more than that.
Obviously, talking about lithium, how do you see the outlook of lithium? And obviously, the price has taken quite a bit of a hit recently. Where do you see the price trending in the future?
Well, I think you have to, I mean, whether it goes up tomorrow or down tomorrow, I haven't got a clue. I mean, maybe there are some traders that know that, and they're probably based in Shanghai, maybe on the LME. It was a bubble in 2022. I mean, in 2021, we sold a property and the market price was 10, heading for $13,000 US dollars a ton for lithium carbonate, which is one of the measures people use. And then by the end of 2022, it has gone up to 80,000. I mean, that's a hell of a rise. And whatever shortage you've got of the commodity, and however exciting the commodity for the battery revolution, I mean, going up by 6 times in a year would tend to be a bit, you know, on the sporting side. And sure enough, it's fallen back down. There are quite a number of reasons for it, but it's back down to about $13,000. I see it really only going up in that, I mean, unless you think that, you know, that the petrol and diesel are going to be the new focus, you know, if Trump gets back and if there's lots of elections happening in Europe as well. To me, it just seems unlikely. I mean, you don't have to be a real climate change fanatic to say that actually you want to have clean cities. And if you look at even London, let alone Shanghai or New Delhi or something, and you see this smog in the background, and who wants it? Nobody. And so electric cars are very obviously going to be a part of the solution for that. Industrial plants, and it's another dynamic. I do believe that lithium is it's the fact that lithium is a very key component of almost all the battery technologies at the moment. I mean, there will be competition from hydrogen, there will be competition from sodium ion batteries, which are much less developed than lithium ion batteries. But I mean, at the end of the day, lithium is a very light metal. That's a great plus. It's very fit for purpose for batteries, especially for things like electric cars, and can be used in energy storage as well, but so can other things. And you know, it's going to be a big market. I mean, car demand's not going down unless we all live in 15-minute bicycle cities, and in which case, well, still we need electric bicycles. But the chances are that people are going to buy more cars, that those are, the replacement strategy is going to be increasingly electric. Whether that happens as quickly as governments have said, I doubt. I mean, there are a number of car manufacturers backtracking on some of their kind of green commitments, if you like. But I see it being a very demand-led market, with demand going up a factor of many, many times. And if governments are serious about getting to a Green New Deal by 2050, I mean, and if it's possible, it's going to need an awful lot of lithium. And if we talk about copper later, it's going to need a tremendous amount of copper. And so basically, I see those commodities only being well bid. Does it mean they won't have cycles going up and down like in the last 2 years? No, of course they will. It's commodities do. But the trend is for electric batteries, and it looks like for the foreseeable future, lithium is going to be a very key component of those electric batteries.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, you mentioned copper. What is your outlook for copper? And I just wonder if you can just tell us a little bit or explain your recent venture into the copper market.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, firstly, I mean, lithium is in our company name. I mean, we also are interested in the whole battery revolution, and copper increasingly is seen as a very obvious part of that. I mean, you need copper to make all this stuff work. I mean, you can have a solar panel and you can store energy, but you know, someone's got to bring that energy to somewhere else. And what are you going to use? Well, probably copper. You know, I saw a fascinating post the other day by the quite a high powered lady who's become the deputy director of critical minerals in battery metals and critical minerals in the United States. She was in the top 30 under 30 in the Forbes list. That's quite a, you need to be pretty smart to do that. And she said she'd just been at a key council meeting, I think the Atlantic Council. And they'd reiterated some opinion which had been put out a couple of years ago that copper is going to be incredibly in demand. So if the growth targets of the world are going to be met and the green energy targets, well, obviously those are ifs. I mean, no one says they have to be, but let's assume it's government policy that they will be. We're going to have to produce, as a world, in the next 20 years, we're going to have to dig out, mine, as much copper as in the whole of history. That is just an awesome thought. And I mean, whether that's at all practical, I don't know. But all I do know is that if that's needed, and it's difficult to achieve, I mean, you know, you're not going to have years of the price languishing while people think about producing something, because otherwise we'll miss it. You know, it's got to be produced to meet those targets. So the only way is that the copper price goes up, all those targets get put on ice, or people say, well, forget it, we're going to go with the diesel for the next 50 years. And that will change the dynamic. But so I think copper is probably one of the commodities I'm the most bullish on. I mean, certainly lithium, but copper is a, you know, it's a metal with a much deeper market. You've got, it's been well traded for decades, hundreds of years, probably, you know, millennia. And there are better hedging mechanisms in place, and people understand copper better. And there will be big deposits. There was one recently discovered in Zambia, but you know, we've expanded into that because it seemed logical for battery metals, and also the territory that we found in Ontario is very close to one of our lithium deposits. So you get economies of scale there. I mean, there's no mileage in being in, you know, 50 different countries, and you can be very busy getting on planes between one and the other, but actually you're not really adding any value. And so it's quite good to have stuff in you know, which is quite contiguous. And this looks like being quite a sensible copper deposit, nothing like as big as the biggest ones in Chile or in Zambia or other parts of Africa, but still, you know, could be big enough. And I'm interested in making money rather than having, you know, being the top of a league table for size of deposit.
Obviously, you mentioned Canada, and your flagship projects are in Canada. How excited are you by the Rainy Lake and Fire Steel projects?
Yeah, well, Rainy Lake, yeah, very excited because it's a reasonable sized lithium deposit. It's not, again, not one of the biggest, but it's so. I care more about profitability and hence cost than about just saying it's a huge. Here's a huge deposit in the middle of nowhere, and we've got to build roads and power lines. I mean, for Raleigh Lake, we don't have to build anything. We've got roads onto the territory. There's the Trans Canada Highway goes within about 5 miles of the claims. There's a town called Ignis, which is nearby. There's a power line which goes straight across our claims. There's gas nearby, so I mean, many people get really stuck by infrastructure costs being so much higher than they expect. And then, you know, they proceed with the project and then they realize, whoops, we've got a big overrun because we've got to not only got to wait for permissions to build a power line, but it's going to take a long time to build it. And actually, we're going to have to contribute to the financing of it. And then that messes up the economics. We're not going to have that, you know, because it's very close to that infrastructure. And that's the same for the Firefield project, where, again, I mean, for lithium, read copper, but it's actually next to a road that goes across, you know, across Ontario, the Highway 17. And part of the claim is actually visible from the road. But equally, we're not talking about somewhere which is in the middle of a population centre where you're going to get environmental problems because nobody wants you to build there, because it's, you know, Canada is big and the Ontario countryside is very big. I mean, that's why I'm excited about it, because it's there. It looks like a decent size that we can achieve, and it's got fabulous access to infrastructure. Therefore, the costs should be lower than of comparable other projects in Canada. If we're talking about third world countries, then obviously the costs will be lower again.
Obviously, you mentioned rubidium. And you seem obviously pretty excited about that. What is the upside in rubidium? And also, what are the uses for this metal in sort of everyday use?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked. I mean, there are it's an alkali metal, so it's like if you remember your periodic table, you've got lithium, sodium, potassium, and then rubidium, and then cesium. So it's highly reactive, so you don't mine lithium like you mine copper, because it would burn up straight away. And you don't mine rubidium any more than lithium. So, rubidium is much less. It has much less world demand than lithium does, but it's used for optical fibers. It's used for quantum computing. Cesium is used in oil rig fluid in the form of cesium formate. We believe rubidium formate could be used in the same way. So the world demand, we're trying to nail down what it is. I mean, I've seen various estimates, but people are saying it's, you know, possibly 4,000 tons a year, which is tiny compared to the demand for copper or lithium or something. But we do have contained lithium, in other words, not the ore, but actually if you were to refine it, of 1,400 tons of rubidium at Raleigh Lake, based on what we've drilled so far. And we haven't drilled, you know, the other 47,000 hectares. We've only drilled 1,000 hectares there, and we've got 48,000. So I don't know what's in the rest, but I mean, I would imagine something. So that's quite sizable. And the thing that's really amazing, if you look at the market price on something like metal.com, actually the rubidium price has consistently in the last three, four years, has been like $1 million a ton, not $10,000 a ton. Now, there's got to be a reason for that. I mean, if something gets out of line for a day or two, okay, it soon gets beaten back into shape, but that's the price that appears there. And it does go up and down, so it's not that no one's updated it for 3 years. And so that economically makes it very exciting. I mean, 1,400 tons at $1 million I could handle. I'm not saying for a moment we're going to get $1 million a ton for our 1,400 tons, but it's a good starting point for investigation, and it's certainly not, you know, $10 a ton, which would be, okay, I can get excited about rubidium anyway, but I wouldn't get excited about it economically. So the rubidium is one of the reasons I'm really keen on Raleigh Lake, as well as good access to infrastructure and, of course, the lithium.
Obviously, you've got assets in Zimbabwe. I just wondered what your long-term plans are for those assets, and what are the opportunities and risks?
Okay, well, I mean, firstly, we have applied for a number of government grants in Zimbabwe. So we have to wait for the government to grant those or not. Hopefully they will grant. And that's, you know, and those would be very large plots. And we're talking about the size of Raleigh Lake again, and you know, if we get everything we want, maybe more. So that is exciting from a point of view of, well, we've got a very big space. in the country that actually, you know, Zimbabwe is number six in terms of world production of lithium at this point. So it's not just another country, it's a major lithium producer. And you know, where and also cesium. So for example, Bikita Mining, which is now owned by a Chinese company, but used to be not owned by that Chinese company, is together with another company that they bought, owned by a Chinese company called Sinomine. And they you know, control a great deal of the world's cesium production. But wouldn't it be exciting to have something else there? Whether it's with the lithium, will come some rubidium as well, for sure. If there's lepidolite, it's got rubidium. If it's petalite, it's probably got some cesium as well. So I mean, we don't know what's there yet because we haven't started. We're not allowed to start until we have the concession. But of course, we've had a bit of a snoop around, so we're not entirely going into it cold. And so I'm very excited by the scale. I'm excited by the economics. This isn't as near to key infrastructure, but of course, you know, it's kind of obvious that the costs in Zimbabwe are not as high as they are in, you know, for example, Switzerland or the UK. They're even not as high as in Canada. So that means that if you get to a market which is poor, and which I'm not expecting medium term, but it means that actually we could be one of the, my guess is that if we find lithium there, we'll be one of the lower cost producers in the world of lithium because of the, you know, certainly of hard rock lithium, because of the nature of the country. The pluses, you asked the pluses and minuses, I think, or how you put it. I mean, clearly Zimbabwe, if you're talking about political stability, and you'd say Canada's very politically stable, I'd say Zimbabwe is pretty politically stable. But I mean, there are a lot of people that would say, you know, they remember Robert Mugabe for 20 years and they wouldn't have touched that with them, you know, for some time. And all I can say is that I've seen a tremendous change. The new government is very open for business. Not so new anymore. It's been there for 7 years. And it's trying to be business friendly. And it doesn't mean there are frustrations there. Yes, there are, but there are in many other countries too. So they've got a quite high unemployment rate, which is sad for the country, but it means there's a good pool of labor. And the educational level in Zimbabwe is very high. So it's a good pool of skilled labor. And that's always important. You know, you're not dealing, you know, with people who are not trained in anything. And that's a great plus for me with Zimbabwe. And of course, that it speaks English is an advantage rather than, you know, other Arabic or Portuguese, which I personally don't speak.
And lastly, what are your plans and I suppose outlook for the next sort of 12 to 18 months of international lithium moving forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, we obviously, having got to a point where we've got a reasonably strong financial position, we don't want to lose that. So clearly we're going to be spending more money on fire steel. We're going to be on the copper project. We're going to be spending money in Zimbabwe, assuming we get or at least some of what we hope to get. And we will be, of course, raising money to make sure that we keep ahead of the funding curve rather than, there are no prizes, certainly in the current market, of saying, well, we've run out of cash. I mean, I'm not going to let it happen, simple as that. And I think that's where it's an advantage having a team which has some ex bankers, people experienced in capital markets, and also some excellent geologists, so we've got all that. So I would say Raleigh Lake, do more of the same, probably take it a little bit beyond the PEA stage and get it to the next stage where we're really scoping, you know, what we need to do next, what it costs, thinking about doing it, working out the PEA we had for Raleigh Lake came out with a NPV of about 340 million Canadian dollars. But it's important to note that didn't include one penny or 1 cent for the rubidium. So it would be very good to augment that PEA with a similar study for the rubidium, which has to be realistic. It won't be at the top of my optimistic hopes. But nevertheless, it will be hopefully quite a bit. It's more than just a small credit to the lithium. It could be something quite significant. So that's focused on Raleigh Lake. Firesteel, we want to do some more aerial surveys. We've already done some. They've come out with interesting results, which we'll, when we've analysed them all, we'll be publishing. And it looks like we've got something reasonably promising there. I won't say more yet because we haven't announced them. And in Zimbabwe, we'll have a hell of a lot of work to do. It would mean going down there quite a bit for me, but also having a team in place locally. And if you have one of these very big areas, then you don't drill every square meter, but you have to do quite a lot of surveying to make sure you understand where you want to drill first, because you can waste so much money on drilling in the wrong place, and it's not a cheap business, even with low wage costs than in a European country. So we'll do quite a lot of work on the pre-study of, where do we actually want to drill as opposed to what do we have. That's important. And then there are things we do, like you can be helped by where is the lithium by looking at the vegetation. So if you've got lithium under the soil, then if you chop down a bit of a branch from a tree and analyze it, you'll find there's lithium in the leaves. It's kind of obvious when you think about it. Or gold, or rubidium, or whatever happens to be, growing under the tree. It's kind of obvious, but a lot of people don't think about the obvious. And so much cheaper to chop a branch off a tree than to drill a 200-meter hole. And that's a good indicator to where to start drilling. And if we've got very high readings for lithium in one place and not for another, then that's probably the place we'll drill first for lithium.
John, really appreciate your time. Thank you for giving us an update on international lithium and obviously speaking about your assets in Canada and Zimbabwe and obviously speaking about rubidium, which I don't think I've had anyone on the podcast speak about that. So perhaps you want to come on next year and give us an update on that commodity.
You bet. I'd love to. So... I mean, I haven't talked about our stock really. I did if it was on a minute, but I mean, I recently did the company did a survey of 20 mining stocks in Canada, and everything has gone down. Simply every lithium related company, and I think the best that anybody did was about 50% of their 3-year high. And the worst was 1.7%. So on that basis, we were at 20, and it's not too bad, slightly above the average. Now, I don't want to run a company that's just slightly above the average. And that's where I think, with the rubidium and perhaps the copper feeding into the lithium, I really have quite high hopes for the next year. So we'll see, but that's my hope. I really enjoyed coming on this again, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Yeah, certainly. And if our audience obviously wants to reach out to you, how can they follow your story? What social media channels are you on?
Our website is internationallithium.ca for Canada, not .com. We are on LinkedIn. We're in principle on Twitter or X. We don't update Facebook very much. Probably should, those are the things. The website is kept quite up to date, and I'm also always happy to actually take a call from somebody.
Yeah, great. And we include those in the show notes accompanying this as well for easy access. So all the best for the remainder of the year. I hope to speak to you next year. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate it too.
Thank you.
Okay, that's all. Bye for now.
Hope you enjoyed that. Really appreciate your continued support. As always, please share these episodes far and wide. And this is obviously a good episode speaking about rubidium, which, like I said, I don't think anyone's spoken about that. So I'd be interested to hear John's progress next year in that commodity. So, like I said, appreciate your continued support. Please keep sharing these episodes far and wide with people in the mining industry, but also people outside of the mining industry. Also, obviously, we need to improve the branding of mining, and we can only do that through education. So thank you for listening, and until next time, happy mining.
Thank you for listening. Remember to reach out to Rob via the show notes, and be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Until next time, happy mining. helping each other to improve the mining industry